hello and welcome to the latest edition of the FT Advisor podcast. Today we are discussing the outlook for fixed income after two turbulent years for the asset class. Investors nursing heavy losses from their bond allocations may be sceptical about bonds right now, but with yields having risen and the traditional inverse correlation between bond and equity returns potentially restored, what is the best way to get bond exposure in the current climate? Joining me to discuss the topic are Lloyd Harris, Head of Fixed Income at Premier Miton, Fahad Hassan, CIO at Albemarle Street Partners, and Guillaume Payet, Multi-Asset Investor at Aviva Investors. Good morning all, and thank you for joining me today. Guillaume, if we come to you first, do you expect the returns from a fixed income allocation, the bulk of the returns to come from income or capital gains over the coming year or so?
Yes, the setup is quite interesting to start the year. Obviously, after the last few weeks, we feel that fixed income market is priced for perfection in a way. So if you break it down from starting with the rates component, you know, you could argue the war on inflation has been won. The Fed is turning into more of a risk management approach, being concerned about leaving policy too restrictive for too long. So, you know, some people will say, look, there's lots of rate cuts priced in for this year already. And to some extent, the market will price the risk of a hard landing in terms of Fed expectations. But if you look at sort of, 4% Fed funds rate at the end of this year, is that, neutral? Is that still restrictive? I guess, if you look at past sort of cycles, when the Fed start cutting rates, they usually go for it. And so potentially there's still some room for capital gains on the government bond side, on treasuries, given the shape of the rate cycle. I think when it comes to spreads, might be a bit trickier. The returns definitely have been brought forward with obviously the tightening in credit spreads that was very aggressive in December. So, potentially more of a carry-led backdrop definitely for 2024. You could see some scenarios of a spread tightening, in case of a soft landing, even if there's some real acceleration on growth and inflation. But overall, the magnitude of that tightening will be definitely more limited from here, and we'll have to rely more on income. But nominal yields overall are still okay on corporate bonds. So it's not a bad player.
Lloyd, I know you run a range of different funds there at Premier Miton, and presumably each has a different mandate or objective, but. Overall, do you expect your clients to get the bulk of their 2024 returns from capital appreciation or from the income accrued from their bonds?
So it's clearly not going to be a straight line, but we think income actually, because as Guillaume just said, the bond market has come an awfully long way in a very short space of time. In the US, we are now pricing in 6 rate cuts. We think that's overdone. So we think if you're at the shorter end of the curve, you're going to do quite well this year, because the math suggests so good. The duration's very low there, but the income component is still very strong. And, that's going to give pretty strong returns from relatively safe assets, whether you're in government bonds or investment grade or maybe subordinated of investment grade. You can get high single digit returns there, but we're not at this point, given where the bond market has got to, banking on any kind of duration rally. And if anything, we are quite wary of the long end. So really for us this year is all about short end carry, and we think that trade's going to do very well.
Fahad, you've had, I guess, a perspective each from your co-panelists, but are you more interested in the short or the long end right now?
So I'm going to take a slightly different tack on it because, we're sort of multi-asset investors and my primary role is building portfolios, using bonds as one of the components. And from our standpoint, we had an interesting year last year. Obviously, the longer duration bonds didn't rally until the final 2 months of the year, and it looked like being in that short duration trade generating most of your returns through income would have been more advisable. But as the year came to an end, what you saw was long duration and shorter duration bonds delivered, you know, approximately the same return over the year. And from our point of view, I think the diversification provided by duration, those longer duration bonds, I think is very, very important going into a year where we expect economic growth to be lower. And I know a lot of that was priced in during those final 2 months. But should a recession materialize and should a hard landing possibly start to be priced in, then I do believe that those sort of slightly longer duration bonds provide diversification within portfolios and therefore merit a place within a multi-asset portfolio. Whether returns are going to follow the same script as last year, I am not entirely sort of sure. I do understand that a lot got priced in very quickly. We may give some of that up, but as I look at the sort of inflation dynamics going into a US slowdown, as I look at Europe, as I look at China, the UK, things continue to slow. And I do believe that that inflation sort of genie having left the bottle is well and firmly back in there. And I think the central banks have, you know, a case to make not to cut if inflation keeps coming down. And I do believe that by the middle of the year, that inflation is going to be well under control. And therefore, it's going to be hard for central banks not to start cutting rates. And at that point, that duration in portfolios will help you. So having been sort of 90% income and a very little benefit from duration last year, I believe that it's more likely to be a 50-50 sort of environment where duration will help you this year. And that's the way we're positioned within our portfolios.
Thank you, Fahad. That was great. Three different perspectives from three investors. Maybe that's inevitable in the bond market. But Fahad, we'll stick with you for the next question, if we might. I mean, you mentioned duration extensively in your previous answer. And, you know, over the last couple of years, duration has really played a very significant role in how a bond portfolio performed to a much greater extent, for example, than perhaps individual securities selection. But do you think about diversification when managing duration, or are you quite happy to take a strong view in either direction? And how do you think about duration at the portfolio level? Because obviously you'll have equity allocations, which can also be long or short duration.
When we think about sort of diversification within our bond holdings, duration is the overarching concern. And obviously 2022 is a clear example of a lack of a duration view affecting returns significantly. I do think that now that inflation is under control, that you can start venturing out and looking at more interesting parts of fixed income. But you've got to do that in a sort of a risk-controlled way within the confines of the broader portfolio. One of the sort of inclusions for us towards the start of 2023, and then we've added in recent months as well, has been high yield. And, you know, I know that there'll be various opinions about this, but high yield bonds provide sort of very high yields, 9%, and have not seen the sort of default experience that many were fearing. And I believe that sort of venturing out and taking a bit more credit risk rather than just having a sort of a duration view, I think is now warranted. I know that the recession view that I mentioned earlier goes against taking credit risk, but I do believe that if you look under the bonnet with regards to areas such as high yield, that there are opportunities, and those are the areas that we're now including in our portfolios. And the other area has been EM debt. EM debt has done very well last year, and we do believe that EM central banks are ahead of the cycle versus developed markets, and they have the wherewithal to start cutting interest rates quicker. Inflation is under control there, and we do believe that having some exposure through EM, both hard currency and local debt, is warranted. So I think it's now is a good time to start looking for diversification within fixed income portfolios.
Guillaume, how do you think about that, managing duration within portfolios right now?
Yeah, for us, I mean, if you look at credit as a way to extend and sort of grab some yield, you know, if you look at start from investment grade, you know, we said we got very tight spreads, you know, we got government yields below the cash rate. They could keep come down a little bit further, but you know, it's hard to see investment grade necessarily beating cash, you know, this year. So really, it depends on your macro scenario, but potentially, you know, high yield can outperform investment grade if you know you get a benign sort of slowdown, which is mostly what we expect. So potentially some more sort of compression potential in the riskier part of the high yield market. But in a way, and as a multi-asset investor, you could see what's been going on in the credit market, and it's similar in EMD and it's similar in equities to a degree, is that sort of flight to quality has been going on for the last few years. I know where we've seen like sort of, you know, US tech stocks, for example, being leading the market. High quality investment grade credit has been leading the market as well. So to get sort of that broadening of performance, you know, you really need those laggard, lower rated credit to catch up. And really that's really going to come down to the macroeconomic scenario you expect.
Lloyd, as I mentioned earlier, I know you run a number of different mandates, so maybe have a different duration perspective on each one. But as an overarching theme, how do you think about duration within portfolios?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a slightly different conversation for me being a specialist fixed income manager. So diversification for me is, you know, a mixture of curve on the government bond curve, but also credit and, you know, credit allocation and, you know, the positioning of credit on the curve. And, you know, given our views is that on kind of short end carry this year, given what the market's done at the end of last year, you know, it'd be no surprise that we like short end credit in particular. You know, we think it yields very, very well. And, you know, whether that's investment grade or subordinated of investment grade, it stacks up very, very well, high single digit returns. We're a bit more reluctant on the high yield side just because we think we can take that trade through subordinated bonds of investment grade companies, and there's no need to go into the high yield part of the market. And, you know, certain parts of the high yield market for me are very crowded. The double B part of the market, it seems like every high yield manager wants to kind of hide out there because they're worried about the health of those companies that are rated lower, maybe in the single B, but certainly in the triple C. So it's a trade-off there for us, and we feel we're getting better in subordinated of investment grade. And then the curve, I mean, we have the opinion here that the curve is far too inverted, the government bond curve, and we think the curve's going to steepen from here on in. So again, you know, we like the short end. We think we're going to get very good returns there just because of the sheer amount of inversion. You know, when you've got base rates at over 5% and then your 10 years already starting with a 3, that's fairly significant inversion.
Given the heightened volatility associated with developed market government bonds over the past year or two, are they still a diversifier in a fixed income portfolio? Can you invest in them? Do they have a role to play? Indeed, are they a safe haven asset class?
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to be that safe haven asset class. I mean, I think that's important, right? In that, you know, when bad things happen in the world, government bonds will rally, you know, and it's at that point you want duration. So I think it's hard to get away from that. But we also can't get away from the fact that the market is still trading off the level of inflation. And that is why all asset classes from time to time over the last few years have been very correlated. And they've been very correlated into the end of last year as well. And we're actually of the opinion that we're not quite out of that yet. We've gone through a rebasing exercise in inflation. We think the labor market tightness is still there. Wages are still high, particularly in the US. And, you know, we might see this correlation in asset classes for a little bit longer, particularly this year. But nonetheless, that doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, if bad things happen, you're going to want government bonds as a safe haven.
Guillaume, from a multi-asset perspective, are government bonds there to provide that ballast in portfolios? Are they still effective at doing that?
Yeah, I mean, the safe haven aspect is an interesting one. I guess it depends on sort of which shock you expect. What we learned in 2022 that you know, a supply side inflation shock, or, you know, and a rate shock. Obviously, that's where bonds are not really helping in the portfolio. But, you know, having said that, it's ultimately going to be self-defeating, as, you know, it will tend to tighten financial conditions. But yeah, certainly in a growth shock and a recession, you know, you'll definitely get that safe haven aspect. But yeah, in terms of the diversification, you could say, look, government bonds are definitely a better diversifier now. If you look at the yield differentials between, you know, the yield you're getting on bonds versus the implicit, you know, earnings yield on equities, especially with more earnings uncertainty, there's definitely more diversification coming there. Is it a good diversifier? I guess it's a different question. You know, very still trading with very positive correlation between bond and equities. You know, we saw the both bonds and equities fell together in the third quarter. They both rallied together in the fourth quarter. So at the end of the day, you got to believe it when you see it. You know, you need to go back to that less positive correlation. And I agree that it comes down to inflation sort of continuing to come back under control. So, you know, you would expect this to improve this year. But, you know, I guess I'll believe it when I see it. And at the moment, you know, we're still really not really well diversified in those portfolios.
Fahad, how do you think about that question? As you said, you construct multi-asset portfolios. Is there a role for govies in all of them as a diversifier or as ballast to dampen volatility?
There is a role for government bonds to lower volatility. There aren't many other avenues other than sort of using alternatives, and you know, they can have their own problems, and using cash, for example, which we try not to do, given that we charge on it. So I think government bonds do provide diversification at the right valuation. So when government bonds were priced with no inflation premium, then they didn't provide that diversification. That inflation premium has now been priced in. It's, you know, close to 2% in the 60s and 70s. It was as high as 4%, where, you know, the uncertainty around inflation meant that you wanted to be paid a bit extra to own a bond. We've priced some inflation uncertainty into bonds, and therefore I do believe that now is a good time to own government bonds, because there's some level of uncertainty priced in, and valuations are more appropriate. And should a growth shock occur, inflation would come down, and that inflation premium would be then realized through higher returns in those bond holdings when, you know, equities may not be doing so well. So I think the valuation aspect of it is critical. And I think what we were surprised by is the inflation uncertainty that got built in to these assets, because we were sort of built for a world with inflation being well controlled. And clearly, post the pandemic, that sort of inflation did come to surprise central banks. And they have acted, however. They've acted with great resolve, with great speed. And I do believe that eventually they'll be able to say job well done. But I think there is 2% inflation premium built in. And I think as investors, that is worth having exposure to, especially when inflation continues to come down and the economy continues to slow.
Guillaume, if interest rates have indeed peaked in the developed world or are near peak, is this sufficient in your view as a multi-asset investor to make high yield bonds an attractive asset class?
It's tricky, because, you know, you got to be careful what you wish for here. You know, if those rate cuts that are priced in, you know, they might only be delivered to a degree, and you're going to get more cuts priced in if you get a bit of a growth downgrade. So from that perspective, That carries some risk in terms of the implication for high yield. You know, we said that investment grade is potentially safer in a scenario where we expect more of a slowdown, although the yield cushion is very, very tight. But yes, it's really in terms of you know, that benign slowdown potentially, where you're going to see some compression further in the high yield spectrum. But it's still a very fine line in terms of having further rate cuts kind of supporting high yield bonds here.
Lloyd, how do you view high yield in the current market?
So I think first of all, worth saying is that, you know, for high yield, we still think you'll get a positive total return this year. We think next year looks a bit more difficult. I think in our portfolio, so we're kind of expressing this in a slightly different way, in that we feel we can get better returns from subordinated bonds of investment-grade companies ultimately this year, rather than high yield. And because I talked about, you know, the upper part of the high yield, the better quality part of the high yield market, we feel is a very crowded trade. And therefore, you know, we're not getting paid sufficiently for the risk versus a risk that we could take elsewhere. And, you know, we feel we can get a better return. So, yeah, I mean, we think the short end has peaked as well in terms of interest rates. It's just that we've got concerns about the longer end, particularly in terms of issuance. I mean, you know, the way we kind of look at fixed income as a whole, I think, is that, you know, we think fixed income is going to be part of investors' portfolios for a long period of time here, because we don't think we're going back to zero interest rate policy. We don't think we're going back to lots of QE, and that was the big driver of very good returns from the high yield market. We just think we're going to get real returns. We're going back to an environment of positive real returns from safe assets, i.e. government bonds and particularly investment grade. So I think, you know, that's one of the reasons here we think the long end's a bit overdone. But certainly, I mean, the maths at the shorter end are very, very good. And, you know, in some ways, there's no need for that reason to take a great deal of high yield risk.
Thank you for that. Fahad, you mentioned high yield earlier positively. Is your view linked to a view on the interest rate cycle or something else?
So our view on high yield is linked to expected returns, and we do our own work around expected returns from various asset classes. And when we look at high yield, even assuming very sort of high levels of default based on the composition of the high yield universe, we can get to sort of equity like returns from the high yield sort of universe, and therefore it looks very, very attractive. And while that level of sort of additional risk and volatility may not be appropriate from a sort of pure fixed income point of view, I think when we construct portfolios and we start comparing high yield to equity and various other sort of areas within sort of equity markets from a geographic point of view, I think high yield is extremely attractive given the volatility it throws off, given the shorter duration nature of it. This year specifically, the issuance isn't very high, and the default experience that we've seen, I know it could get worse, but the default experience that we've seen today has been within the realms of normal, and therefore we were overly bearish about the level of defaults. I think that could likely be the case going into 2024 as well. And even if things do get worse, we are getting paid that very high coupon upfront. So high yield allocations for us serve a significant role within our income portfolios specifically, where those allocations tend to be a bit larger. But then in our broader portfolios as well, they've delivered, you know, 10% sort of returns last year, with lower volatility than equities. I believe that high yield bonds warrant a place within multi-asset portfolios.
Thank you. Guillaume, how do you think about bond market diversification more broadly in the year ahead?
Yeah, so, you know, we touched on ways to sort of diversify your fixed income allocation already, but, you know, I agree that the steepener is a good idea to sort of provide diversification. Say, if you get a hard landing scenario, you will get sort of bull steepening of the yield curves. If you don't get landing, if you don't get a hard landing at all, but potentially more concern around government bond supply, you know, term premium concerns, that way, you know, the new that were very hot in the third quarter, potentially you do get a bear steepening of yield curves. So So I guess, you know, steepness can be a way to sort of diversify your fixed income allocation in terms of playing out that curve risk. Obviously, we also look at regional divergence in the government bond space in particular. Definitely more rate cuts priced in the US at the moment. So there's room to catch up in the UK. We still think, despite the recent move, that there's still more interest rate sensitivity in the UK economy than in the US. We think in Europe, with potentially more fiscal tightening, which is not going to be necessarily a concern for the US as well, potentially more outperformance. So, you know, it's potentially playing the regions in a way that can benefit the portfolio. And on the other hand, you know, Japanese government bonds, you know, are an interesting funder for these other regions, you know, given the sort of obviously divergent dynamic in monetary policy that we're expecting to continue this year, with, you know, YCC being removed and negative interest rate policy being changed as well in the near future.
Thank you. And just to clarify, YCC is yield curve control, yeah. Is that correct?
That's right.
Sorry. Thank you. Lloyd, how are you thinking about diversification across the range of mandates that you run?
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with anything that's just been said. Certainly, I think that the steepness probably going to play a part as we stand at the start of the year. Things can change though quite rapidly in the bond market, as we saw last year. We expect that kind of longer end volatility to be a feature. Certainly on the credit side, as I've said, really a mixture of credit. And I think, although it sounds like Fahad and I are disagreeing somewhat on high yield, I think we're looking to do things a premier in a slightly different way. But we're getting to the same point where the carry is going to be a fairly decent component of returns for this year. And that in itself is going to provide a diversifier, I believe, to what's going on in other markets. So I think as I said earlier, I think it's going to be a good return, total return wise, of fixed income this year. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be a stellar year. But I think we're going to get a series of years where we get good returns from fixed income, and it's going to remain a feature. It's not a short term trade. It's going to remain a feature of investor portfolios for a while.
Thank you. And last but not least, of course, Fahad, how do you think about bond market diversification?
So our view with regards to bond market diversification and diversification more broadly is driven by those expected return calculations. And the yield available in fixed income is higher than it has been in, you know, nearly sort of, you know, 15, 20 years. And there's lots to choose from. So while there's obviously room to be added, being, you know, various points of the curve and being in certain regions, we find ourselves having great problems. You know, what to choose from at elevated expected returns means that you should have a little bit of everything. So if you were to go down the pure diversification route, you'd have little bits of, you know, lots and lots of different areas, and in the absence of trading costs, you'd almost, you know, have a bit of every area. So the way we're thinking about it is we've been quite sort of picky in what we've chosen, which sort of allocations we've had. I think looking forward, what we're looking to do is just start taking a bit more risk. I've mentioned EM debt, I've mentioned high yield, and I would go as far as to say that I'd be willing to consider converts as an interesting area as well. And basically just sort of reintroducing a bit more sort of credit risk into fixed income allocations, I think, is the next step for us. And we'll be taking those steps this year before we start considering adding, you know, equity beta through smaller companies or anything else. We'd like to consider fixed income as a starting point to add a bit of credit risk, to add some cyclical exposure within fixed income allocations. And I think now isn't a bad time to start doing that, to sort of Lloyd's point. That, you know, returns for the next couple of years could be good because of where we're starting.
Thank you for that, Fahad Hassan, Chief Investment Officer at Albemarle Street Partners. And thank you to Lloyd Harris, head of fixed income at Premier Miton, and Guillaume Payet, a multi-asset investor at Aviva Investors. And thank you all for listening. Please do remember to tune in to future editions of the FT Advisor podcast. Thank you.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.